Is on. Okay, welcome back, everyone. It is now 9:30. we're actually on time. That's pretty good. Okay, here we go. Let's see, test. That seems to be working. Okay, that's working. Okay, clear cold lighters, here we go. The clear cold light shines forth, and cold it is, and yet the heat evoked by the group love permits the warmth of energetic moving out. Is there anything you'd like to report about that experience of dealing with clarity, coldness, warmth, heat, spiritual energy, and group love? You know, I'm beginning to feel, I look at the back of the room here, I feel I have to reach across to, did we didn't move the chairs back, or did we? Did we move the chairs back?
No.
No? Okay, I'm just... Oh, it's okay. I don't, when I look at who's sitting there and I think of moving this table up, I just say no. I guess I look at it as sort of the great defending wall, something like that. All right. In these words, you have the key to group initiation. Whoa, that's a major statement. The clear cold light shines forth and cold it is, and yet the heat evoked by the group love permits the warmth of energetic moving out, the key to group initiation. And that is what we are studying, in a way. All of this work is work that is going to prepare us for the very necessary process of group initiation, without which the time-space schedule of the planetary logos cannot be fulfilled. So the more we grow into each other in the state of soul, and the more we share a common consciousness, that fluid something, that fluid sensitive something called consciousness, the more we are preparing together to be presented during the next 500 years, we are told, by the various masters to the initiator for group initiation. DK just started the process, in a way, you know. He introduced the idea, and it is just ideal for the Aquarian age. And I'm sure, when I think of the people I know and I look around and so forth, that we'll be participating consciously in this process. And it's a very encouraging thought to me. Like I said, my first experience with this was in Masonry in 1974, when, because of some of the crowding of the time, it seemed, people could not take the degrees alone. It was always considered that there's one candidate, and one candidate should go through all of this initiation alone. But there were more applicants in those days, anyway, and we had to go through in groups of three. And I didn't really realize that it was the foreshadowing of something that would be more common in the Aquarian age. So we have the key to group initiation. The light of the higher initiations can stream in when it is evoked by the group love. So this is such a defining statement. There's no higher initiations unless the group love is active in such a form that it can evoke the light of these initiations. So this really does tell us that we're going to have to approach together. We have a lot of individual work to do, of course, don't we? I mean, you know, no one can do someone else's work for them. We have to go into our own private space and work very hard, but we're going to approach together, which doesn't necessarily mean that everybody will be taking exactly the same initiation, but there can be an approach that is simultaneous. It's quite interesting to realize that if a certain number in a group have taken a particular initiation, then the group itself can, in a sense, take that initiation. I mean, look, he talks about the first initiation of humanity, right? Imminent. But how many really will technically be taking that first monastic initiation? Not really so very many, because he talks about the evolution of humanity in terms of many millions of years, and that even in the next round, there will be many people that are just stepping on the path. So when we're talking about the first initiation of humanity, it's like a certain proportion has to take it in order for the energies related to that initiation to flow in a beneficial way through humanity as a whole. And it's, you see the analogy, right? That in the groups, he says, well, there has to be at least one initiative of the fourth degree in order for this to happen, or of the third degree, or two or three. But when that door is open, then the whole group can benefit from certain energies. Not that individually, they themselves, each one will have taken the same initiation. So there's a difference here between the group openness to energy and the idea that everyone has to be standing at exactly the same stage on the evolutionary path, and all in a group have to be exactly candidates for the same initiation. It's a hierarchy, isn't it? Yes, Anne.
Was there a certain percentage? Could it be two-thirds of the group?
Well, you know, sometimes it seems like much, much less. Much, much less than two-thirds of the group. I don't know those figures. But when you look at humanity, there's only a few million people out of the billions that are capable of approaching that monastic, the first great monastic initiation. And yet it's enough to lift the whole group. And maybe that's what we're talking about, you know.
Did you say a few million in the entire population of humanity?
That's how I'm thinking of it. Okay. I'm not thinking of it as a very, very large number. When I say a few million, what? I mean, it could be in tens of millions, I don't know. Sometimes he talks about it. A number of millions, many millions, that kind of thing. But, you know, we have, how many billion people do we have right now on the planet? Not to say who's out of the body. See, we have six, or is it growing to be more? Seven now? Uh-huh. So the number who are really approaching the possibility of the initiator, so to speak, touching the seventh petal, which is basically what's happening there at this first initiation, that's not a big number. And yet it is 11, if you know what I mean. It lifts up. The light of the higher initiations can stream in when it is evoked by the group love. So this is such an important thing to cultivate. It's not just group mind, which is very good, and which is something that we want to have illumined, right? The group mind. But the group love is another quality, and it's not personal attraction. It's not liking and disliking. You see, in other words, in the beginning of Rule 11, it says, get rid of all these things. Here are four types of eliminations that you have to get rid of, or eliminations that you have to undergo. And the very first one is sentimentality, which is about liking and disliking personalities. That's the first thing to go. So you and then you, yes?
The second initiation, how many of them in the world today?
How many second degree initiates? You know, I couldn't say. I can only say less.
Yeah, thousands?
I think that's reasonable. Look, you know, I don't even want to hazard a guess about
less than
that. It's just,
millions.
I would say, You want to pin me down, right? Yeah. Well, there'll be more. And, you know, at some point, what does he say? There are 404 members or something like that of the new group of world servers at this time or something like that. And it's in White Magic. He gives a number that's around 400 who are actively members of this group. Now, obviously, it's increased tremendously since that time, but he knows the number specifically. I don't, but I get the idea. Okay, Britta, yes?
To me that it reminds me a lot of the way that the Aquarian Age
is going to be. The group love idea.
Yes, and the way that the Aquarian is considering the group and the whole.
Group love and Aquarianism, the way the Aquarian considers the group and the whole. Yes, yes, you know, it is a sign of universal love, Aquarius. And let's just say that by the time we get to the Venus part of Aquarius, we ought to be pretty good at this. I've often noticed in the astrological chart when people have Venus in Aquarius, depending on the aspects, of course, but they are often very adept at bringing about group harmony and group love. This is more the second ray side of it rather than the fifth ray side of Venus in Aquarius. I've just... sometimes when I see that, I say, aha, this person has the potential to be a harmonic factor within the group. And when we talk about harmony, we're talking about Buddhi. And when we talk about Buddhi, we're talking about love, wisdom. So it's coming. And you could, you know, in the group today, we're sitting around the table here, and our friends in extension, and we talk about the group love and the warmth, and you begin to feel it. You begin to feel it, how we begin to relate to each other at a deeper level, as souls, dismissing from our consciousness all the preoccupation with the obvious. You know, the obvious is what you see. The obvious is what you interact with usually, or what people say or do. There's something behind all that, and that is the real person that I'm sure we will rediscover in a stronger way when we drop these bodies. And the relationship between the real person that we will call the soul is the thing that we have to really cultivate in these groups. And it requires a certain a divine indifference to the reactions of the personality, don't you think so? I mean, so many of us get all tied up with how a person is reacting with us, or we are reacting with them as persons. And what is required is something very different from that. Something within that and beyond that. And you can spend your whole life just interacting with people, if you know what I mean. When I'm going to use the word people in the sense as relating to simply a person. And you can just be so fooled by the outer characteristics of persons and never get to see the soul. And this is where that, the third subplane of the mental plane, spiritual discernment comes in. When you're dealing with a person, can you discern the soul? That's what I always tell myself. Because discerning something means that you are seeing something that most others don't see. A discerning person is able to detect in a normal presentation of data something else that most people don't see. So I think we should be spiritually discerning persons, and we should work at somehow sensing in a discerning manner the soul who is within the obvious presentation. When I use the word presentation, I mean that which someone else gives and that which you receive from their presence. The light is clear and cold, but produces the needed heat, which is a symbolic word used in many of the scriptures to express living spiritual energy. Notice how he uses the word living. It's not by accident. Why do you think he uses the word living at that point? There's a technical reason for it. Living. What is it about that which lives? See, can we relate the word living to vitality? Living and
awareness,
vital?
Awareness of
We do have to have that for sure. I guess what I'm trying to say here is I'm always keeping the map of the cosmic physical plane in my mind. This map. And there is no livingness. Wait a second, I have to. No, that's right. Excuse me, just one second. I'm hearing my own voice echoing. There is no livingness until you touch the Buddhic plane. In other words, this is the vital body of the planetary and solar logos. And that's why he uses the word living spiritual energy, because it relates to the spiritual triad, especially the higher two levels of it, which are found on those planes where life begins. And the vitality, the etheric vitality of the planetary and solar logos actually begins. Now, sometimes I differentiate, you know, and I say, well, really, the vital body of the planetary logos includes the higher mental plane and doesn't really begin on the logoic plane, but that the vital body of the solar logos is the higher four cosmic ethers. So he's saying, please turn towards the spiritual triad, and especially towards the atmic and the Buddhic aspect of the spiritual triad, if you want to have the kind of heat that he's talking about. Now, this is a kind of contradiction to the very first rule for applicants. Let the disciple search within the heart's deep cave. If there the fire burns bright, warming his brother, yet heating not himself, the hour has come for making application to stand before the door. That type of heat is different from the heat discussed in the advanced rule, is it not? Because we say, you know, look in your heart's deep cave. If the fire is burning bright, which is solar fire, warming your brother, but not heating yourself, meaning stirring up your own fire by friction, then you are ready to stand before the door. So there's two use of the word heat. And in the earlier rule, heat means Mars, means fire by friction. In this rule, heat means Buddhic warmth, triadal energy, spiritual energy, something that's even higher and more animating than the energy of the soul or the egoic body. So he's already, again, he's taking us right up there into the realm of the spiritual triad and saying, look, build your antikarana and get used to these energies, because it is required, especially for group initiation. So this light is clear and cold, but produces the needed heat, living spiritual energy of the spiritual triad. I said spiritual energy and not soul force. Now, sometimes we talk about soul energy, don't we?
No.
We don't? We have talked about personality force. You never do. You talked about personality force and soul energy. But here, he's lifted the game. Now, the soul is the force, and the triad is the energy. He can lift the game again, and then what would he do if he keeps on lifting the perspective? You know, just keep on lifting, because energy is above force, right? So the spiritual triad becomes what in relation to the monad? Right? The spiritual triad is the personality of the monad, as if the monad were the soul. So we will have triadal force and monadic energy, won't we? We can keep on raising the perspective. And herein lies the distinction which you will someday have to grasp, meaning when we actually begin to focus within the spiritual triad, which means we care more about the planet than we do about our individual super self, you know, the accumulation of everything we've been for hundreds and even thousands of incarnations. That's our individual self on the higher mental plane, very precious, and one day we care more about the divine plan itself than that particular configuration of virtue on the higher mental plane. This group love is based upon the egoic aspect of the will to which we give the name sacrificial love. The egoic aspect of the will to which we give the name sacrificial love. Well, okay, what's he saying? The sacrifice petals, do you think? Is that what he's talking about? Because, in a way, the whole initiatory program doesn't even begin until the sacrifice petals begin to unfold. So the will begins to make its presence felt, especially through the sacrifice petals, and then, of course, through the synthesis petals and so forth. But here, through these petals, the Atma, or the spiritual will, begins to make its presence felt, and yet, because it is the soul we're talking about, it is the heart center of the monad, and so the whole thing is a demonstration of the love energy. The whole egoic lotus, a demonstration of love energy. I was just reading, you know, because of how things are around here, you know, one tends to read some of the healing material, and there is, in the second ray technique of healing, there ends up being a need to align the heart between the shoulder blades, the heart in the head, the 12-fold egoic lotus considered as a heart center of the monad, and there's an implication that there's a 12-fold structure in the monad itself, which is the source of all of these 12s, and which has to be aligned with them as well. So we want to begin to get the feeling of these various heart centers within our energy system, and be able to call upon them for a certain type of energy which can then be expressed in healing and in other psychological, spiritual interactions. Okay, so anyway, we have a group love here. It's growing. And the egoic aspect of the will is expressing through the sacrifice petals. And in the sacrifice petals, I guess this is the important thing that I want to say, in the sacrifice petals, we are expressing sacrificial love. Sometimes we say, oh, well, the love petals express love. Well, remember, the whole ego expresses love. The whole ego on the higher mental plane expresses love. So through the sacrifice petals, we are expressing sacrificial love. Now just think about our group and our groups and the way that an attitude of sacrificial love promotes group love. Just ponder on that for just a moment. In other words, if the initiates in a group, you know, I'll say the initiates, first, second, whatever degree, are successful in aligning with sacrificial love, it really makes the group love increase and the group coalesce. I mean, in other words, a group, these spiritual groups, these are places for the expression of sacrifice, the very first law of the soul. If somebody is joining a group of the kind we're talking about here in order to get something, which will be inevitable anyway, then it's not the same as if the motive is to use the group opportunity to give. Do you see the distinction? Of course, you know, in a way you have to be informed before you can inform others. You know, you have to learn before you can give, but there's an attitude, you know, I want something different from I'm here in the group so that I can give what I have. That will immediately create a tremendous loving cohesion in the group. The second ray is called the ray, one of the names of it, the ray of attractive coherency. It involves coming together, pulling together on the basis of sacrificial group love. Okay, Then, of course, he enters here as the realist and tells us that this does not necessarily connote happy relationships between individual members of the group. Like we all get together and we have such a good time, you know. That may happen too. But happiness, we know, has to do with pleasing the personality. And one of the very first things that happens down the Antikarana is that all the personality comforts get disrupted. We were talking about the burning ground, right? So when you start imposing a superior pattern on the patterns which are part of our personality tradition, there's a big ouch that occurs. This is a big training. I think about these young men that go into the military, you know, and they have to go through this drastic training process, and now young women too. It's such an imposition of a different way, and all the things that they had considered comfortable in their lives are completely disrupted. And I really wonder if there's such a difference between normal military training and esoteric training. You know? I mean, you know, esotericism is a lot of fun. We get together and we discuss great ideas. Isn't that great? Okay. But when we really submit ourselves to the training, then what? Then down the Antikarana comes these great archetypes, and they are imposed upon the patterns that we have made. And you know, the archetypes are not going to give way. The patterns we have made that we call our conditioning, that's what's going to give way. And that is a friction, and that is a burning ground. The friction between contradictory energy systems creates fire. And that fire will consume the lesser pattern. That's another way of looking at the burning ground. So, happy relations between individual group members, not necessarily. It might presumably lead to unhappy, outer, superficial interplay. But basically, it leads to an unalterably staunch loyalty underlying the surface of outer life. Have you seen this in politics sometimes? Where outwardly people really can't stand each other as persons. But somehow they are so connected with the same purpose that their adherence to the same purpose overrides any liking or disliking of the personality, and they just put the liking and disliking aside and they unite on the basis of purpose. Have you seen this? I've seen this, you know, in some of our, I keep on thinking about Bill Clinton and his wife Hillary, and how they are really united in the area of purpose. But of course, their personal relationships have been full of friction. But somehow, they seem to have set that aside in the interest of the greater goal. Have you ever been in a situation where you had to do that, you know, to forget the person you're dealing with and remember the purpose you both represent? I think we have to learn to do that more and more. I think when a bunch of generals get together, you know, like Finn is talking about, he loves to talk about General Patton and Eisenhower and Bradley and Montgomery, you know, it's almost like he was there or something, you know. Although I think he was 4 years old. But anyway, whatever. Those guys, on the personality level, they may have had very little in common. Some of them were diametrically opposed, but they had to adhere to the same purpose. So it's really a question of putting first things first, isn't it? Putting principles before persons. Principles before persons. Triad before soul personality. Because soul is in the realm of quality. Do my qualities harmonize with your qualities? What if we're on different colors? What if we're not on complementary colors at all? Those qualities might clash. You might have a clash of color, a clash of sound. But from the point of view of principle, so what? So the colors clash. Something else holds us together. And we're going to have to learn to put first things first. Unalterably staunch loyalty underlying the surface of outer life, even if the outer life can be frictional at times. Is this clear, I suppose? Right? You know how it is, no matter what we learn in our heads, we're still a little bit subject to the astral body and to liking and disliking. And you know, it's remarkable how disciples can take things personally still. You know what I mean? And that, of course, we have to outgrow that. And we all do it. We take things personally. That's why the solar plexus and the astral body present such a formidable foe in a way, and why the second initiation is so tough to overcome those attractions and repulsions as if they are secondary. Okay. All right, just going on here. The master's influence, I always enjoy this section. The master's influence, as he seeks to aid his disciple, always produces transitory turmoil. You know, all these people, they wrote out their applications. Yes, Master DK, I'd just love to be in your group. What an opportunity. They had to fill out an application, you know, and just like a normal arcane school application, maybe a little shorter, but everyone got to read them and so forth. So the master is going to influence their lives and produce a transitory turmoil. Now notice DK's use of the word transitory. Transitory from the angle of the soul, but frequently appalling from the angle of the personality. I think that's so amusing, you know. The eager personality, thinking about what it can get by association with the master, wants to get in, into the group. And then this great disruption occurs. And, you know, the English word appalling is really a very strong word. It means that you are absolutely aghast. You are shocked. You are horrified. You are completely undone. You don't know what to do. You don't know what to say. You're appalled. You're paralyzed. You're just, your jaw drops. That's appalling. So, you know, we have all of this ahead of us. I have to smile when I think about that. Because it seems like such a great thing to be in association with the masters. Just imagine trying to abide Master Moria's presence. I once had an experience with this in a group, and we were, you know, in the early days of 1997 or so, we were forming the first incarnation of these new esoteric schools, or at least our attempt to move toward them. And we had this meditation in the Moria College of the time. Now it's changed into the Federation. And I do believe the presence of Master Moria was there, because I've never felt a more weighty, oppressive energy which did not allow anyone to move. It was like you were locked in place by this incredible, powerful, down-pressing, Vulcanian energy. It's as if the whole atmosphere of the room became thick with this first ray thing that held you in place. And so I just say, well, you know, we have a lot of work to do in the area of co-measurement when it comes to thinking of associating with the masters. The masters usually hold themselves back from association with us for our sake, because of what it would do to our energy system if there's too frequent or unmodulated an association. That was quite an experience, and you know, it was, what can I say, impressive. You know, in the literal sense of the word, this pressure from above astonished me, and I haven't forgotten it since, and that was 15 years ago. So appalling, appalling. But okay, wait a second. I seem to have lost. Just one second. I've lost my appalling. Hold it. There we go. Now I can be appalling again. Now, what were you saying about the personality?
You're missing something in the text. I don't know.
Yeah, the text suddenly went. I erased something. I'm always erasing my text, you know. I do my best. Then I can make it up, right? Okay. Yeah, here it is. But from the angle of the personality, appalling from the angle of the personality. I'm going to do, you know, my computer's acting up. Uh-oh. You see all those little flickers and things like that? This is dangerous. I might have to. There it is. I erased that. But I do want to remember it, don't I? I want to remember how appalling it is to have the master's interference in my life or anybody else's life, right? Yeah, that was just it. He reminded me, he made me erase that. Okay. Similarly, now look here, you know, this is practical because in our own life we have similar experiences. Similarly, the projection of the life and influence of any senior disciple, and all of us are senior to someone, right, into the periphery or aura of the aspirant or lesser disciple is in its degree likewise disturbing and upsetting. See, people have to remember that. They are so often attracted to someone from whom they think they can learn something, only to discover that closer association with such an individual is personally upsetting and disturbing. Are you willing to tolerate that? You are? Okay. Well, you've known me long enough. I hope I have upset and disturbed my fair share of disciples. I wouldn't feel quite right unless I had done that. And I have certainly been a very disturbed person myself, as many people can attest. Oh, well, so we seem to grow by a series of unintentional disturbances. This is a point which should be carefully borne in mind, both as regards the disciple's own reactions and training, and as regards any effect which he may call forth in the life of a probationary disciple or lesser disciple in his own sphere of influence. We have to remember this because, you know, what happens is that people start to blame you. I don't know if you've experienced this. They start to blame you for the disturbance they feel in relation to you. You know, they wanted to come, and then they feel disturbed, and then they blame you for disturbing them. And it's not any deliberate thing at all. It's just energy systems locking in with each other and creating friction because they are not yet harmonious. So that's what lies ahead to us. Of us as we approach the ashram, personal disturbance which has to be managed and made to be very secondary. His English words are just excellent. These intrusive influences and their consequent effects, which are produced upon any individual or a group by a master or senior disciple, are usually interpreted in personality terms and are very little understood. In other words, you did something to me, personality terms. And then, of course, that gives the approaching disciple the excuse to withdraw. I feel very uncomfortable when I'm around you. Obviously, you're not my teacher. Know what I mean? This is interpretation in personality terms. Yes, Lorna.
I'm thinking about the word irritation.
What was that word?
Irritation.
Irritation.
Is that the irritation you're talking about?
I believe that is one of the phases of the irritation we're talking about, which is basically a Martian condition of being stirred up in an inharmonious, chaotic manner when confronted with environmental energies or even with very coherent energies from the master. But after, you know, after synchronization of vibration, then this irritation is reduced and a more Venusian coherent interplay begins. I was thinking about, we were talking about these healing rules, and there was this part of it, let the healer concentrate the needed energy within the needed center. Let that center correspond to the center which has need. Let the two together synchronize and together augment force. So, you know, someone needs to be healed. You're the healer. You have a chakra. This person has a chakra. You concentrate energy in your chakra, all, you know, in the light of the soul. And then you synchronize the same chakra with the other person. And at first, I would say, there has to be a clash, because the chakra energy of the healer is in such a different harmonious condition compared to the disrupted center of the one to be healed. It's like two energy centers coming together and an initial friction which has to give way eventually to a more Venusian harmonious interplay. Now, you know, you have more experience with it than I do, but I would say we're talking here about energy systems coming in touch with each other and going through a period of adjustment. And some of that adjustment may be initial irritation on the part of the less organized energy center.
But I think that DK tells us that the master, even the master, can have this sense of irritation.
Even the master, yeah, the last...
Yes.
One of the last things for a master to get rid of is a sense of irritation. Isn't that it? A master cannot afford to be irritated with his student. Otherwise, the student will disappear in a puff of smoke. You know, if we as disciples have to be very careful about how we speak and how we think, because it can have an unusual impact upon people, then just imagine how careful the masters have to be. You know the story of Master K.H. I've mentioned this, but it was back when he was probably a third degree initiate, back in Pythagorean days, and he became irritated with a student. You know, I guess some students deserve that, you know, but this particular student, Pythagoras let his irritation be felt. And then this student went out and committed suicide. Sensitive student. And that was a huge lesson in the life of Pythagoras, K.H. Then from that time on, he never again released anything of that nature in the direction of a lesser disciple. You know, I mean, what a terrible lesson to have to learn, and of course how terrible for the student also. But sometimes when you do something that is not quite in control and it has a very dire effect, it teaches you a lasting, lasting lesson. Now, I forget where I heard that, but it is, did I read it? Did I hear it? But it sounded right, because apparently KH is so considerate, so very, very considerate about what is said. Although sometimes you read the Mahatma letters and, you know, it looks pretty straight. On the other hand, DK tells us that not so many of the Mahatma letters were written by the masters, but were written by HBB as if the masters were writing them. So I don't know that story completely, but she certainly had an inside line to their thinking, but they were not actually the authors of many of them. Yes, Eric, yes.
We have a saying in Danish,
saying
in
Danish.
Like this, tolerate Michael or tolerate anything.
If you can tolerate Michael, you can tolerate anything, right?
Yeah, tolerate Michael or tolerate anything.
Or tolerate anything, yeah. Thank you. okay, so these reactions, he says, are not usually understood. But we have to put these reactions simply in terms of the language of energy. We must not look at them personally at all. These are energy units, energy patterns coming in touch with each other and having the same kind of inevitable interactions as you would expect in a chemistry laboratory when you bring different substances together that are patterned in different ways. They are nevertheless aspects of the higher will in some higher disciple, and are, you know, his words, of course, are so graphic. They are aspects of the higher will in some higher disciple and are beating upon the personality will and evoking the sacrificial will of the ego, of the other, and hence lead to a period of temporary discomfort. So here comes the master or some high initiate filled with monadic will. There's a straight shot to your personality. It's beating upon your personality in an uncomfortable way and evoking from you the need to sacrifice the pattern that you had been holding on to as if it was so important. You know, because you say, well, looks like I've got to get rid of that. Okay, and that is painful. So this is a more technical explanation of the process. The higher will and some higher disciple is beating upon personality will of the lower disciple, evoking the sacrificial will of the ego, and hence leading to a period of temporary discomfort. I think I felt this once. I went to work in the Arcane School and at the headquarters in the Arcane School 32 years ago. And I thought it would be just wonderful to work there. You know, and I learned that my expectations and the culture of the place, which was, I think, you know, based upon the sort of first-ray approaches of Mary Bailey at the time, were somewhat discrepant. And so, a lot of new people experienced pain when they came in. The same thing with Meditation Mount. Have you ever been to Meditation Mount? Yes? It was really beautiful, isn't it? It's just wonderful in the hills of Ojai, you know, that peaceful valley where Krishnamurti did his teaching, and they say there never was a war there and everything's beautiful. But, you know, you go into this idyllic place, lovely, and you try to work there for a few weeks and you're pulling your hair shortly because there's some contrast with what's there and what your expectations were. So we have to be ready for these frictions. Tolerate, Eric, tolerate anything. This the aspirant and the inexperienced disciple resent and blame the evoking source for their discomfort instead of learning the needed lesson of receiving and handling force. Well, you see how impersonally Master DK treats this. This is an impersonal energy treatment of the whole problem. And that's why it's so good that in groups such as our own, from a beginning, we have studied the rays. We have studied astrology. We have studied the chakra condition. We are trying to look at each other as energy units. It puts us in a much better place to interpret these inevitable kinds of unpleasant interactions. Any thoughts? Any questions? Okay, where, however, real love exists, it will produce the lessening of the personality will. That's an interesting idea. If real love exists, it will negate the normal kind of selfish self-assertion that goes along with personality will. It will evoke the sacrificial will. In other words, where real love exists, you are willing to sacrifice for that which is loved. And there will be a constantly growing capacity to identify the group with the will and purpose of the monad. Let's read that again, because it's just so good. Because, you know, we can talk about love for several thousand years before we experience it. Where, however, real love exists, it will produce the lessening of the personality will, the evocation of the sacrificial egoic will, and a constantly growing capacity to identify the group with the will or purpose of the monad. So, you know, you could take that sentence, it could be your seed thought for months. Just that. What do you think? Anybody have a statement you want to make about that particular very potent statement of the Tibetans? I find it, what it means to me sometimes is we don't know what real love is, I think. And remember how he said, if you want to know what love is, reflect upon love. Life changes by reflection. That's a very secondary approach, I suppose. But reflect upon the very thing you want to build into your system. You know, St. Paul, Paul of Tarsus, Saul of Tarsus, he didn't seem at first like an especially loving person. At first. He really was taken by Mars and Scorpio, wasn't he? And then later, he is the one who is this in the letter, one of the letters to the Corinthians, that makes one of the greatest statements about love which has ever been made. Obviously, there was a very big change. He understood something deeper beyond his personality tendencies. Do you have in your life now occasions in which the sacrificial egoic will is evoked? Do you have in your life now situations in which the sacrificial egoic will is evoked? Think for a moment. Let's ponder just for a moment. Have you found something in which this is existing in your life, or has recently existed, or you anticipated existing? I think the family is a very good place for this kind of thing to emerge, or the group. Because there's always going to be something, there will always be something, a situation where you will realize this situation is not going to change unless I make the sacrifice. Know what I mean? Have you been through that? You know, like, you want things to be different, and you realize that the only way they will be different is that if you are the one who actually gives something up in order to make something better. I think family life teaches this, and a lot of group interplay when there is not too much understanding at a particular moment teaches this also. And then, of course, that further step, the growing capacity to identify the group with the will or purpose of the monad, Like, you know, I could give you an example here. In the mind of the planetary logos of Sanat Kumara at this time, there is scheduled a huge second ray propaganda effort to spread the knowledge of the ageless wisdom. This is a major planetary theme at this time, weighing heavily upon the second ray ashram. If one begins to realize that big movement, which has to be brought out into human consciousness, one has realized an aspect of the monadic purpose in time. And then the question is, does the group get with this purpose and conform to it? That is a question, and it's up to the group to see whether it has within it the willingness to go with this larger push coming from the planetary logos himself, according to the ray cycles. After all, it's the period of the forerunner right now, isn't it? We're in the last 13 years of the era of the forerunner right now. And a tremendous illumination is supposed to pour forth from the second ray ashram. So knowing that big purpose, what does it mean to us, and what does it mean to the group, and could it mean more? And we all know it could mean more. And then we would be forced to think and choose and decide where we will lay our energy, wouldn't we? Okay. The progress of the group is therefore, this is another one of those amazing statements. The progress of the group is therefore from one burning ground to another, each burning ground being colder and clearer than the preceding one, but producing sequentially the burning fire, the clear, cold, lighted fire, and the consuming divine fire. Looks to me like another good seed thought for a number of months. Wow, you know, I just am amazed at Master DK's capacity to bring, you know, it's like a whole book together in one sentence. Let's look at that again and see what our thoughts are about that. The progress of the group, and, you know, I'm speaking to us as if we are a group, okay, you know, because in a way we've been studying together for a long time, so many of us. And, you know, out of this group come certain activities related to the full moon work and other things. And I'm including the wider group here of people that are involved in the esoteric education movement, the faculty of the Moria Federation, and other people who are doing things in their own way to bring about the spread of the knowledge of the ageless wisdom. I'm including all of us in a loosely formed group which has this type of purpose. The progress of the group is therefore from one burning ground to another, each burning ground being colder and clearer. Sounds like a contradiction, doesn't it? Than the preceding one. I mean, you know, it's fire, so how can it be cold? Being colder and clearer than the preceding one, but producing sequentially the burning fire, the clear, cold, lighted fire, and the consuming divine fire. And of course, you have the different levels of the cosmic physical plane indicated in those last three words, don't you? The burning fires is suggesting fire by friction and the effect of monadic fire within our personality vehicles. The clear, cold, lighted fire is on triadal levels. The consuming, and there's your trigger word, the word divine. He is usually discriminating between the word divine and the word spiritual, right? Spiritual has to do with spiritual triad, and divine almost always has to do with the monad. So the divine consuming fire we're going to learn in one of the future rules that God is fire. So somewhere in this process, and probably dealing with the burning fire and flickers of the clear, cold, lighted fire, that's where we are focused, as far as being subjected to the divine, consuming divine fire. I don't think we're there yet. But maybe Moses on the mountaintop, Master Moriah on the mountaintop, 4,000 years ago, that's one way of interpreting it. Maybe he was subjected to this consuming divine fire when he became, in a way, the burning bush, which burned but was not destroyed. So anyway, the power of the monad is capable of consuming many lesser things, but leaving the essence intact and empowered. Okay, so what would it mean for a group like this if we were going to go from one burning ground to another? What ideas do we have about that? Would we just like say, well, it's time for another burning ground? Or would something bring us onto another burning ground? What would happen that would make us move from one burning ground to another? Or from one purification to another? From one essentialization to another? What would bring us there? What are your ideas about this? What would bring us from one burning ground to another? Yes, Anne?
It could be a crisis.
A crisis, yes. And again, do we wait for crises to happen or do we produce them? You know, trick question, of course, but... You know, DK says, well, make your own crisis. But you don't just sit there in front of the crisis pot and start to stir it and say, let's have a crisis. What brings on the crisis? This is what's important. Yes, Ella.
You have a determination to stand.
Yeah. Yes, yes. Well, that's one thing for sure. The determination to stand brings on a crisis. Or similarly, you know, the determination to move forward as a group brings on the crisis. See, they're both first-rate things. The Leo part, you stand in the center. The Aries part, you move forward. Either one of them will produce a resistance. There's all these forces that want to distract you, okay? So when you stand, you're immediately putting yourself in tension with the forces of distraction.
Because in my opinion, when you stand, you say yes.
You say yes, yes.
So you do that, and then you move forward.
Well, okay, you can, is standing moving forward? You can say so. You can say so. Whenever you throw yourself against the elemental tendencies or the lunar tendencies, the so-called world of the moon, of the elementals, you're going to have friction. You're going to have cross currents. That's really what a crisis is, isn't it, in energy terms? Cross currents. See, a current of energy is going one way, another current of energy is going another way, and they interfere with each other and produce friction and discomfort. And it's sort of a kind of a fire by friction type of heat, which is not very pleasant.
And that would last for a long time because it's all...
You say it could last for a long time? I think it could last for a very long time. I think how it goes... If you look at the sort of Kundalini picture of the rising eight, there's going to be moments of resolution, crisis, resolution, crisis, resolution. You know, it's always going to be disharmony, harmony, disharmony, harmony. Whenever, there's always going to be moments when you overcome the frictional factors. And then you move forward again, or as you would say, take your stand even more at a greater point of tension, which is the same as moving forward. And then you're going to produce more frictional factors as you rise, as you ascend, as you stand. It's all the same, rising, ascending, standing. Because when you stand, you always stand at a new point of tension. And if you're at a new point of tension, there is an increase in resistance by those things that do not share the same point of tension. Yes, Lona.
I'm thinking of standing. The decision to stand in the light of the soul all the time.
Seeking to stand in the light of the soul all the time. Yes. 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 And even, yes. And then we also have this phrase, standing in spiritual being, which suggests a kind of an antichoronic standing along that line, which even touches the triad and the monad. So the more higher power we bring in at a certain point of tension, the more our environment will be in conflict with it until we overcome the environment through the power of the higher energy. We have to be ready for that. Do you think that when Christ went into the lowest levels of society, there wasn't a stir? There's this incredible energy that he is, and he goes into this place where respectable people won't even go because the energies are so low. But of course, he had another thing working for him, an incredible ability to know the person he's talking to, and to harmonize energies and to modulate his radiance. Because, you know, masters don't necessarily let all their energies out at the same time. They play upon their energy system in a very skillful way according to whom they may be speaking to. That's what Master Moria, he says. He says, always speak proportionately to your listener. So I guess he could go there and somehow people could feel they had something in common with him. Now, you know, if a group like this undertook, I don't know, to meet more frequently, you already meet pretty frequently, to intensify your efforts together, to serve the local community together in some a meaningful, esoteric way, you can be sure that you would evoke renewed and progressive burning grounds because the pressure would come upon you. Fire would come upon you through your will to do more and better. See, this moving forward is kind of an Aries thing, or this standing in the center of the circle at increasing points of tension, it's going to bring more fire into the group. And the reason for the fire will be this: to get rid of the things in the group which prevent you from fulfilling the group intention and the group will. You decide to do something, but maybe the group's not ready really to do it. So in comes the fire and gets rid of the things in the group which prevent it. One of the things that we'd have to overcome is age and inertia. Even though, you know, it's not too pleasant to talk about those things. Okay, but that's what DK said. I could wish you were younger and more courageous. Okay. All right. See, so he says it's the perfectly natural thing to hit your high water mark and just sort of settle down to a nice personal life. So immediately, your new willful intention would be cutting athwart that very understandable personality tendency. Hey, I'm almost 70. What do you expect of me? You know, I can say that because I am almost 70. You know, so my will says one thing, and my body says another. That's one thing that the fire would have to come in and change. Yes.
But don't you also think there has to be this balance about the will and then also the love? When the love increases in the group, then there is more space for this, what we call it, the tension, so that...
More space for the what?
Tension.
Tension. So when the love increases in the group, there's more space for the tension.
So
Well, I think group love is a great facilitator under any circumstances, and it's going to definitely help burning grounds purify things faster and better. Absolutely. I agree with that. And I'm not saying it has to be unpleasant. The thing is, we have to understand what's happening. That's the thing. When you assert yourself in a new way, it's almost like, you know, let's make the boat go faster. Okay? The next thing you know, you're creating a bigger wake, and the water ahead of you is giving more resistance because of the pressure you put on it. It's just physics, in a way. We just have to understand what will come upon us when we decide to do more and better more frequently. It's called intensification, and the resistance that almost will inevitably come with intensification. That's all. Yes. Yes. Go ahead, Anne. You weren't, or you were just waving your hand? Okay.
No, but maybe I was going to say something.
Oh, yeah.
You both have this understanding in the head. So if that's again the word understand.
Understand.
If you understand in the head, you also get an understanding heart.
Yes, it sounds good. I'm reminded of some of those pictures of zodiacal man where he's bent around in a circle and his feet are put on his head. Have you ever seen those? in one way, Aries and Pisces, the head and the feet are destined to become one astrological sign, we are told, at a certain point. I just say, look, you know, I just want to be realistic about this. In the labors of Hercules in Gemini, there's the fifth thing that Hercules has to do. He has to help Atlas. Atlas is struggling, holding up the world, okay? So Hercules comes along and says, okay, I see you're having a tough time. Let me help you. And when Hercules takes on some of the pressure of holding up the world, it is indeed a burden. And there will be much more pressure in his life. And at the same time, of course, the golden apples of the Hesperides will fall into his hand. But he must continue to uphold the world. So we are always moving from toward greater and greater points of tension. That is what we are actually asked to do by the Master. No matter whether we're getting older or whatever, we're asked to continually increase our point of tension. Not unintelligently, but intelligently. And Master Moria has symbolized that whole dynamic with these words, burden me still more as I enter the beautiful garden. So he's saying, more weight, more weight. Give me more weight, more weight. Of course, he's a first-ray master, right? But but the masters expect those who approach the hierarchy to carry more weight, and that will produce burning grounds, the pressure of fire.
I have an example. I once traveled in a car with a little girl, and we were supposed to be quite a few people within that car. So she suggested to some of the other people in the car to sit on her yes, and she had some 4 or 5 people on her knees to create more space in the car for others.
Right.
And I assume she had some Saturn aspects. I can't remember. And, taking on burdens.
Taking on burdens that she...
4 or 5 adults on her.
And she voluntarily took on the 4 or 5 adults in the car on her knee. You know, you begin to see why Saturn does have a place in the sign Aquarius, in terms of carrying burdens. Well, sure, and why not?
It was concern for, you know, the situation.
Look, if you have to carry a burden, you might as well enjoy it, right? And that's where the love comes in, you know, to enjoy, you know, he's not heavy, he's my brother, you know. I was found very moving, and it does give the right discipleship attitude, I think. Okay. Thus, in parables, the truth goes out, and gradually the initiate grasps the use of heat, warmth, light, and energy. I don't know if we defined well enough the clear, cold, lighted fire. This is, he's added another word to it, hasn't he? Of course, all forms of energy are fire anyway, aren't they? And we've been studying the clear, cold light, and we understand that there's amazing intuitive direct clarity in that, on that level, and that in that clarity, we are cold to all former lesser attractions which would distract us from our higher point of tension. But now he's thrown in the word fire too, hasn't he? Does that mean anything to us? Clear, cold, lighted fire. Sequentially, we move from the burning fire to the clear, cold, lighted fire to the consuming divine fire. We're now in the spiritual triad, and we're experiencing the clear, cold, lighted fire. Why fire? Just that it's an energy term, and that all these states are fires? Does it in a way burn anything? I want to say I think it burns illusion. It burns misconceptions. It burns anything other than that which the intuition reveals. Yes, Lona.
I experience that. It's also about the etheric body.
Etheric body.
Soul-infused personality.
Okay.
Is more and more in control of the soul.
Soul-infused personality is more and more.
Two ways of
looking at it. Yeah. Okay.
Etheric body. This is a fire too.
So you're looking at this in relation to the etheric body and the increasing control of the soul through the soul-infused personality. See, what I was doing was also talking about etheric, but I was taking it up onto the cosmic etheric. I was dealing with the Buddhic plane as if it is an etheric plane. So, you know, of course, there will be, in our whole relationship of this personality and soul, there will be a reflection of this anti-Quranic process. See, it seems to me that one of the things DK is trying to do in the rays and the initiations is he's trying to refocus our consciousness in the spiritual triad, ideally, or at least in alignment with the spiritual triad. He's saying, I think, you have achieved quite a bit of soul infusion, you more advanced disciples. Now it's time for you to move into a whole different point of tension, which doesn't mean you can let the other point of tension go. You still have to be the soul-infused personality. You can't even get to the new point of tension I'm talking about, unless you are the soul-infused personality, but I want you to know what is triadal life. In other words, I want you to know what it means to be impersonal. Now, you know, we used to go to the arcane school, impersonal, impersonal, personal, emphasized all the time. But, of course, what DK has told us so often is that the easiest thing to misunderstand is impersonality. You know, because people then make it into some kind of cold, personal, you know, they are coldly personal when they think they're impersonal. Untouchable, unfriendly, unpleasant, impersonal, you know. And that's not at all what he means. So I told you that this old disciple, I came there actually to replace him. I never did, but he did. He died a couple of months after I came to the Arcane School. And we were talking about it, and I was saying, what's all this some personal stuff around here? I just don't get it. It doesn't seem to be working. And I said, it's not very warm. Because I was interested in warmth, you know, being a newbie and so forth. And he said, what could be warmer than the loving impersonality of the Christ? And it's bang. One of those, boom, you know, stuck me for years now. I'm thinking back, you know, 32 years ago. What could be warmer than the loving impersonality of the Christ? So, but DK wants us to experience the triadal worlds. And that is not easy when we haven't fully experienced the world of the soul. But we need certain hints about what it is to be focusing in the spiritual triad. And I just want to say that planetary concern, regardless of what happens to you as an individual, is already a good sign of entering the perspective of the spiritual triad. To really think globally and to really act as if there is a greater love that is affecting everybody and a greater will driving everybody and all things is already a step towards this kind of impersonality that is being cultivated. So it's a whole new raising of the game that is required of us to take this book seriously, if I may say. Only love, self-love. Thus in parables the truth goes out and gradually the initiate grasps the uses of heat, warmth, light, and energy. He arrives at an understanding of self-will, sacrificial will, and shambolic purpose. DK does not think that these things are too big for us to consider. About self-will, we have no problem understanding. We also, because of our training, have set our higher self against the expression of pure self-will. We now consider the attitude of self-will to be a limitation. So we are entering sacrificial will. We are willing to sacrifice our self-will in a larger purpose. But about shambolic purpose, we have much to learn, and books of this nature help us a great deal. And only love, self-love, root love, and finally divine love, it's always the sequence, right? From personality to soul to monad, can reveal the significance of these symbolic words, namely self-will, sacrificial will, shambolic purpose, only love will reveal. And the occult paradoxes which confront the true aspirant as he attempts to tread the way. And the true aspirant is minimally the initiate of the first degree, whom Master DK is training. Basically, he's saying, first of all, he said, I train initiates of the first and second degree. Third degree was left out of the picture. Then later, he wrote, I train initiates of the first, second, and third degree. The true aspirant. He trains aspirants for initiation. And he does it in a very technical way. Master KH, being a Chohan, is concerned with the wider picture of the wider type of education. Any thoughts or questions on these things? We're going to take our break very soon. Yes?
I was just thinking that it's all the time these three levels of things.
Three levels.
Level of fire, level of love.
Yes.
And it's this threesome connection I'm thinking about. Is it related somehow to the initiations?
Yes.
One, second, and third?
Yes, I think so. In a way, you could say there are always three levels relating whether to fire or to love. And basically, they are sort of periodical vehicle distinctions, personality, soul, and monad. The question is he talking about the first, second, and third initiation? And at least in the case of the divine, it begins at the third initiation, because that's the place where the monad becomes conscious, a conscious factor for the first time, or we become conscious of it.
But would you say that even if you start in these levels, self-love, in the same aspect on a higher level, if it's on the fourth initiation, the fourth degree?
We could lift these things up.
Yes.
We could even say, see, self-love is not initiatory, but group love is. Group love is related to the Christ curriculum. Divine love is related to the Sanat Kumara curriculum. So it's initiatory in that respect. Fire by friction is not initiatory. Solar fire is related to the Christ curriculum. Electric fire to the Sanat Kumara curriculum. And basically what DK is doing in his later work, maybe he's doing it for people in the future, but he said even at the end of the 20th century and the beginning of this one, the people would be there. So, maybe we are some of those people. He is giving us these two curricula together. He's saying, very simply, develop love, develop will. And meanwhile, of course, he's educating our mind in ways that we, you know, could not do so ourselves. But you know how it is. Mind is always tertiary. Even after the third degree, we are told that the knowledge petals begin to disintegrate. So what we usually have is the configuration called 115. 115. We have first ray, second ray, and then 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 is the old world. It's Moses in the old world not reaching the promised land. It is everything about the previous aspect of divinity, the third aspect of divinity. The two aspects of divinity that we really have to work on are love and will. And it's just assumed that we'll fit ourselves in terms of knowledge so as to better work on love and will. So that's really what DK's curriculum has been here. It's a love-will curriculum, especially visible in a book like this. Okay, I think it's time for us to take a little break, but not until this paragraph is read, because it's only 10:56. As we continue our studies of the rules to be followed by those receiving initiate training, okay, that's who these are for. So remember, but I said the very first day, if you are a disciple, if you are a disciple, you are being trained for initiation. Whichever initiation it may be, if you are a disciple, you are being trained to take initiation. As we continue our studies of the rules to be followed by those receiving initiate training, I would remind you of certain things, some of them already touched upon but requiring re-emphasis. Any usefulness which these rules may have for you will be dependent upon your grasping a few basic ideas and then proceeding to make them as factual as you can, as factual as in you lie. So after our break, we will deal with these few basic ideas which have to be followed or obeyed if these rules are going to be at all helpful, at all useful to us. So we take a little break. We'll come back at 11:15, which is 9:15 GMT, and see you then. You don't want to move? Okay, we go on. All right.